16 years ago, when I delved into my psychology studies, my first academic infatuation was systemic therapy. Since then, I've embraced a polyamorous relationship with a mix of modalities, yet a constant underlying focus on the systems in which we humans and our problems are embedded persists. In our conversation, Imoni Carter-Hale, a systemic psychotherapist, reignited my love of examining individuals within the context of their relationships. She not only provides an engaging overview of systemic therapy, but also explores its application in trauma contexts and shares what it means to work in a holistically trauma-informed manner. Enjoy.
I wondered if you can start by telling me a bit about how you became interested in and involved with systemic therapy.
Yes, absolutely. So my story, I think, is quite interesting because essentially I went to law school because I wanted to work with survivors of trauma. And that's the irony, is that I was in law school and I thought the work that they were doing was amazing. But I realized that the work that they were doing also felt quite limited. You could only see the individual's kind of progress through the legal system up until the actual court date. But beyond that, you never know what happened to the survivor. And for me, I realized I wanted to do more and I wanted to contribute more. So I ended up leaving law school and I ended up doing a completely 360. And I applied for my master's in marriage and family therapy. And I realized I really wanted to understand families so much better. I'm also the eldest daughter, which I know there's a lot going around TikTok currently about the eldest daughter experience.
Tell me more.
Yeah, I feel like...
Tell me a bit more.
Yes, I feel like being the eldest daughter is interesting because for me, it's also in context of me being like an African-American woman. And there's a lot intersectionality-wise that goes into the expectations of what is expected for me as a Black woman, being the oldest in the family. So on one end, there's this like unspoken rule of being well-adjusted. And I love that term because I feel like I work with many people, many eldest daughters in particular, that have this narrative of being well-adjusted. And I feel like for me, that is a really big narrative that played a significant role in like who I am today. And I almost had to, I think, also unpack that in my own personal therapy in terms of how is that narrative guiding the decisions that I'm making for myself or the people that I'm allowing in my space. I was lucky to have a mother who didn't pressure me what it means to traditionally have been the eldest daughter, where she just wanted me to really live my best life. She just wanted me to have everything she could never have. But I think because I seen everything that she didn't have and that I was working towards, I still stepped into that role as the eldest daughter, where I felt some level of responsibility for ensuring that I almost like was breaking the glass ceiling for my siblings and that I was challenging these like intergenerational roles that were expected. Because I think now as the oldest, I don't want my siblings to have to feel like they hold any responsibility for me or my mother as maybe I felt the responsibility for them and my mother.
And so choosing therapy over law school, was that somehow an act of rebellion or
It's so interesting because my family initially seen it as an act of rebellion. It was very much so when I made the call and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to continue with law school. They're very much so like, what are you going to do? Your whole life, I had been preparing to be an attorney. I was watching Law & Order SVU. I was... You know, watching these crime shows, I was interning in college. I interned at 3 different law firms. I was setting myself up to become an attorney. And so for them, they didn't quite understand the switch. But I think also when I did my bachelor's, it wasn't just criminal justice, it was also psychology. So for me, I could never let the psychology aspect go. But I also felt like I'm supposed to be an attorney. Like this is what I've trained myself to prepare for.
Wow. So how quickly did you transition into identifying as a mental health professional or someone who was going that route?
I think the transition for me did not happen immediately because I had to grieve that decision that I made, even though I knew it was the right decision for me, I still had to grieve the life that I had expected myself to have. I remember, I'll never forget the day when I decided not to go back. And then when I accepted my new path, I remember literally crying on the bathroom floor. And I remember my partner at the time, heart-wrenching. She just didn't know what to do because she didn't expect me to make that decision. I didn't expect myself to. But then I remember getting to the point where I started researching the programs. I literally would say, though, I gave myself about a month to really sit in this decision that I made. But after that month, nothing was stopping me from like getting accepted into a master's program. I researched all the master's programs. I thought a lot about what I wanted. And my family, I would definitely say my family of origin played a really big role in me actually becoming a systemic therapist because I looked into other trainings, but this training in particular focused so much on patterns of behaviors within the system, thinking in a relational manner, maybe not necessarily in the individualistic manner. And I knew that's what I wanted. I wanted to think relationally. I wanted to understand what that meant. So when I made that decision, all that stopped me really would have been me. I just was like not slowing down at all.
Right. So systemic therapy, was that love at first sight?
Yes. And this is what's so interesting. I think because I did my training in the States and it's so interesting because I had never heard of it. And I think that's what's more interesting is I had, prior to this training, never knew what systemic therapy was. And I think that that can be quite surprising because usually people go into certain fields of psychology having at least some understanding. I knew the tiniest amount of systemic therapy, but from what I knew that it was absolutely meant for me. I had never met another form of psychology that felt that it resonated more with me and my experiences.
Wow. And can you maybe provide an overview of what systemic therapy involves?
Yes. Yeah, of course. So systemic therapy is unique because essentially it's a form of psychotherapy wherein it focuses on like the individual in context of the systems around them. And I think that a lot of times I say that, I say it quite often, to be fair, because I meet people daily that don't know what like systemic and family therapy is. And that's really valid because like I said, I wouldn't have had any idea what it was prior to my training. But essentially what it is it's understanding that people are relational at the core. So we're never alone. Even when we feel we're alone, we're still within a larger unit that's separate from us, whether that be a couple, a family, a friendship, an organization, the education system. These are all systems that we are at one point were either a part of presently or historically. And so essentially it's like thinking about individuals in the context of their relationships with others. So that may mean exploring patterns of communication, understanding someone's beliefs, someone's values, helping them to understand both healthy and maybe unhealthy, deep-rooted emotional and like behavioral patterns that are really impacting them in their life presently.
Amazing. Could you share also a bit about how systemic therapy is applied in the context of trauma, since you mentioned, you know, how you got drawn to law school initially, that was also to help people in dire need?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we think about trauma and trauma-informed practices, that's another buzzword, I do think, in today's society. But when it comes to trauma, it is understanding that systemic therapists can work with individuals, they can work with families, they can work with couples. We can also work interchangeably. So it may look like maybe we're seeing an individual, but they're like, I want to bring in my partner for a couple of sessions, or I want to bring in my family for a couple of sessions. And it can look like we're working with just an individual or the different systems in their life. And essentially, it's helping them to understand the role that that emotional response holds in their identity as a survivor. And I think that's really important because a lot of times when we think about trauma-informed practices, we think a lot about the idea of showing up, meeting the client where they're at, understanding how these traumatic experiences have shaped who they are today. But I think it's also worth sharing that it's important to understand how trauma impacts the brain. And I talk a lot about my clients when we think about the personality development, when we think about the brain and the way in which it's impacted by trauma. And when we think about dysregulation, I could probably all my clients would say that they've heard me say prefrontal cortex and amygdala a million times when we've talked about trauma. But I think it's important because when we're thinking systemically, we have to understand that, again, as I mentioned earlier, no one individual is completely alone. And so it's best to be able to support them into understanding how their trauma has kind of impacted their identity as a survivor, but also how it's impacted the things that they're yearning for. And when I say yearning, what I mean is, as humans, we naturally yearn for different ways to be seen, different ways to be heard. So we can yearn for love, belonging, acceptance, connection is a really big one, freedom to be autonomous. And when you're thinking about trauma, it's also understanding from a systemic standpoint, what are they yearning for? What is this kind of trauma response role play in their life and the way that it's kind of affecting their yearning? What are they needing now that they are a survivor? And I tend to say survivor because I've noticed that in my time in working with individuals who have experienced trauma, I have found that many people actually do prefer the term survivor because it's more empowering. Yeah. It's definitely much more empowering for what it is that they've experienced, but also what they are is aspiring to be in the future. And so it's supporting the individual or the system to kind of explore these fears and these anxieties and thinking about also, I think one thing that systemically we think a lot about is helping them to understand how intergenerational themes of emotional expression is modeled. A lot of times people don't really sit and think about the way that they express themselves emotionally or the way in which they've learned to express themselves emotionally or the lack thereof expressing themselves emotionally. A lot of people don't think about these in terms of like the intergenerational patterns until something happens where they're forced to sit with those uncomfortable feelings. So from a systemic standpoint, I'm also going to support them in understanding how these themes are not a one-off. They're not situational. And I get a lot of people that say, oh, I only feel this way because of the breakup. And I say, well, the breakup may have exacerbated what you're feeling, but I highly doubt that this anxiety that you're feeling happened as soon as you were dumped. And usually it just doesn't work that way.
And when you describe that you also have a holistic approach, is that then also bringing in psychoeducation about the workings of the brain and, you know, what you're describing right now, where it's not just like clean systemic approach to problems, but yeah, can you say a little bit more about how you conduct your therapy?
Absolutely. You know what? I will say, I think part of that is my American training, because obviously I live in the UK now and I'm licensed in the UK, I find that my colleagues, their training was very different. Their training was systemic, yes, but systemic. That's just what it was. Whereas my training in the States was systemic, but it also was holistic. And it was also based on concentration. And I chose to have my clinical concentration on trauma because I felt like even though we're working systemically, that doesn't inherently mean that you're working in a trauma-informed practice. As I've learned from other people that I've kind of engaged with. And so for me, what it means to work in like a holistic trauma-informed way is to just be willing to understand my client's experience, also educating myself outside of the therapeutic space. I think it's so important that not only am I listening to their experiences, I'm also not expecting them to teach me. Because how frustrating would it be to go to someone who has a completely different cultural context and understanding of life, and you feel like you're having to teach your therapist about every experience that has to do with your cultural norms. It would be really frustrating. And also, it could be quite invalidating because it can feel like your therapist just doesn't care about who you are holistically. So for me, not only do I want to listen to my client's experience, I also want to teach myself outside of that space. I want to enter the conversation with my clients being curious about their experience, but equally so, I really want to be self-reflective about mine and thinking about how my intersections are impacting their internal experiences as well as my own.
That makes so much sense. When you do a training in systemic therapy, is narrative therapy actually also part of the mix? Because in Denmark, where I'm from, that's all the rave. And I know narrative therapy stands on the shoulders of systemic therapy. I mean, chronologically, you know, first came systemic therapy, and then it seems to almost be a spinoff.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. It's so interesting that you say that, because narrative therapy is really, really big. We do a lot of narrative. We also do a lot of attachment. So when you look at the development of these theories, a lot of them are, they not only play off of one another, but they also can be used and intertwined really relatively, I'd say easy, because there are like similarities in the understanding of the theories. So like the aspect of supporting the client in narrating their experience and understanding the impact of that experience. Yes, that's systemic, but that's narrative therapy at the core. And so narrative therapy plays a really big role. Attachment plays a significant role. Even if I'm seeing someone in an individual kind of manner, I heavily do a lot of attachment work with that individual, because we don't have to be in a system to understand our attachment styles and to also understand maybe the way in which we're showing up in spaces or the limits that we're not setting with others based on our attachment, both childhood and adolescent.
Ooh, I want you to speak a bit more about that, like how systemic therapy might be applied to issues related to boundaries and coping skills.
Yes, this is actually a really, really big one. And I think what's interesting is you would think that someone who's coming to maybe work with a systemic therapist for anxiety or depression or maybe even self-esteem is one where you're not necessarily maybe thinking about boundaries. But the reality of it is everyone that I've worked with, regardless of why they've come to me, we thought about boundaries. And that's because with systemic therapy, with both children, with adolescents, with adults, you're exploring the limits or even the lack thereof that people are setting or not setting in relationships. You're also kind of understanding the impact of roles. You may have heard me say roles a few times, but that's really important in systemic therapy, because one thing that we tend to think about is the roles that someone takes within a system. And usually those roles seem to be transferable. So for example, let's say there's an adult woman, maybe mid-30s, that comes to a systemic therapist, and she's noticing that she's really struggling with like work stressors. You think on the surface, oh, okay, we'll do something around work, trying to figure out how to help her cope. But then we think about, well, what role has she taken in work? And then we compare that to the role that she was expected to take within other systems in her life and how she is perpetuating that role and how it's then exacerbating the stress and the dysregulation that she's experiencing at work. So part of that is not only supporting the individuals in learning these coping skills that are going to be much more effective and creating internal regulation, it's also helping them to understand how they're maintaining the anxiety, how they're exacerbating the anxiety unbeknownst to them, simply because of the roles or the hierarchy or the rules, the really rigid rules that humans set for themselves that don't allow for them to be fallible in any way. I find that that tends to come up when we're thinking about boundaries and supporting in the development of coping skills.
Nice. Is there a specific type of issues that you experience yourself working more with than others, like a certain type of clients even?
Yes, I would say I work with a lot of people, a lot of trauma. But I think also part of that is because, like you were saying, on my profile, I make sure to explain my experience and work with the trauma and the way in which I approach it. So I would say a lot of people with trauma, whether that be chronic, whether that be acute, whether that be an isolated incident, trauma is a big one. Anxiety is a really big one. Depression, really any mood disorders. I tend to get a lot of people with mood disorders, a lot of people with low self-esteem, a lot of people with difficulties in relationships. And I would say it's definitely a range. And I guess when I go back to trauma, in particular, a lot of things around emotional abuse. It's interesting because when I was training, I worked with a lot of women where there was a lot of physical abuse. But I've noticed that since I qualified, less and less I'm noticing women in particular are seeking out support when it comes to physical abuse until there's an incident that leaves them maybe so incredibly emotionally or physically crippled. Whereas I feel like before, when I was working in particular in a charity that focused only on domestic abuse, I noticed I seen women more in that context. But I guess in a private context, both women and in men, to be fair, it seems to me that there is a bit of stigma around seeking private help when it comes to physical abuse in particular. I wouldn't say that that extends to different forms of interpersonal violence, but in particular, survivors of physical domestic abuse. I've noticed there's stigma around seeking help when it's not attached to a charity that advertises that specific remit of work.
So in other words, there almost has to be like a certain severity where you would seek out like a shelter or a charity or something.
Yes,
like that.
And they would more likely seek out a shelter or charity, which makes sense because that's an entire network of professionals. So I completely understand that, because usually within these networks, you have psychiatrists and you have like other holistic forms of support all within one network. So usually if they were to come to me and it was anything related to domestic violence in particular, it's usually that they've done the work in a charity setting and they feel more contained to do the depth work that they weren't doing in that particular setting.
Yeah, makes sense. Would it be possible to describe or give an example of how a session with you could look like how your systemic perspective is integrated into your trauma-informed and holistic approach?
Yeah. What I would say is what I usually like to do is I like to start off very naturally with an introduction, but also I'd like to understand someone's past experience with therapy. I know that some therapists do this, but I also know that other therapists may not do this depending on their practice. Whereas for me, I feel like it's really important to understand historical experiences with therapists, because you'll very commonly meet people who will say, I had a horrible therapist. And one thing that I have taken from my training is that I don't inherently assume that any therapist at their core is horrible. However, in saying that, because I know that some people would disagree with that, in saying that, I can recognize that not every therapist will meet the needs of every community, and that's okay. So it may be that maybe the therapist wasn't horrible, but they weren't specializing in the support that they needed. And so for me, I definitely like to talk about historical experiences with therapy. And then I like to get their understanding of what they feel the problem is. How do they view the problem? This allows me to conceptualize their ability to be self-reflective. One thing with therapy, whether it be systemic or not, self-reflection can be one of the hardest aspects of therapy, being that I was in therapy myself, and most therapists will tell you that they've been in therapy. When I first did that process and I had to sit with my feelings and self-reflect on the impact of my decisions, I found that to be incredibly difficult. And so for me, I also think that it's important to be realistic and to create the environment so that the client knows that there are going to be some moments where you probably love me and you think I'm wonderful, but there'll also be moments where you probably don't like me that much because what we've done was really hard. And maybe I've challenged you in a way to be self-reflective that you've never been challenged to do so before. But I also think that that's helpful because those moments where you don't like me, let's look at that. Let's use that. Who do you feel I'm a reflection of in that moment?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's that rings so true to me. And is there even like an average length of therapy? I realize I don't even know this, if systemic therapy typically goes on for years, months.
It's so interesting because this is another one where all the research says different things, which is quite interesting. But in my practice, what I will say is I tend to do longer term therapy. And that's because I tend to work with individuals who, though they may not be so dysregulated that the risk is so high that I couldn't manage it, they're still in such a significantly low place or a dysregulated place internally that they're needing longer term support. So traditionally, systemic therapy would actually be seen it would happen every fortnightly. For me, I find that depending on the individual's needs, I can do fortnightly. But ideally, and the people that I've worked with, ideally, they want to see me weekly. And I would say the longest that I've worked with a client has been a year. For many of my clients, it's been upwards of a year. And you can find that that happens, whether it be with an individual, a couple, a family. You may be doing up to a year, and then it may look like you're doing maintenance with them afterwards.
Is there anything else besides what you've described so far that you would say is unique about your way of working, like your approach to therapy?
I would say I feel like what's unique about my way of working is the way in which my brain works actually in a session is quite interesting, because for me, I've always found that everything they're saying, I'm trying to catch it. Like if you were to imagine a web, I'm trying to catch every single thing that they're saying to try to conceptualize it at some point. And I feel like because my brain moves so quickly, I feel grounded in my body. And so I'm able to hold on to these ideas and I'm able to bring them back. And I think for me, that is quite unique, because being that I was a young person growing up and I used to question if I had ADHD in the way that my brain worked, the fact that I was able to learn and work and approach therapy in a way that works for both me and my clients, I find that to be unique. Because one thing that I've never been told is that I've gotten something wrong. And though it could happen in the future, I'm always actually very aware of, like, if I ever get something wrong, if I ever forget something, you know, how I will feel about that. And I think that's part of me being self-reflective. Because I can say that now, but I also wonder in my practice, what would it mean if I did get something wrong? So then I have to sit with that, being that that hasn't happened yet. But that's because also the way I work is I take so many notes. And for me, that is unique in my practice, because I've seen some therapists that can do the entire session with no notes. And I'm just like, good for you. But I can't do that. I actually can't work in that way, because I'm conceptualizing so much and my brain is moving so quick. I just feel like if I wasn't notating, I'd miss something. Miss something that is really important, because you know how there are clients that, you know, you'll have clients that'll say things so quickly and you almost wouldn't have catched it. They almost say it in a very caveat manner as if it didn't impact them. If I wasn't doing my mini notations, I would miss something like that.
Yeah. Wait, so how long have you been in private practice? Because I find it so remarkable that you haven't gotten anything wrong.
So you know what? I have been in private practice for going on 4 years now. I started in a group practice, which I will say to this day, I am so grateful that I started in a group practice, because I feel like when I left the group practice and I moved to the UK, it allowed me to not only understand the workings of a business — they don't teach you how to be a business owner when you train as a therapist. So, you know, it allowed me to understand the inner workings of a business, but I think also it allowed me to be more flexible in my practice. So now that I'm doing part-time private practice and full-time public sector, I'm able to translate those skills. They're really transferable to the public sector.
The last thing I want to hear you about is, what do you find most rewarding about being a therapist and practicing specifically systemic therapy?
I would say what I find most rewarding is I love seeing the highs and the lows. I find it rewarding because it's the epitome of seeing and experiencing a human at the element of them allowing themselves to just be. And I find that to be rewarding because so much of our lives as humans is living up to an expectation, what we're expecting of ourselves, what we think other people are expecting of us. And when we have those moments where we just allow ourselves to show up as we are with the therapist. And when my clients do that with me, I think that is so rewarding. And I always tell them I'm so proud of them that they just allow themselves to be human, because we're not robots. And I think it's really important that we recognize the humanness in the experience. Yeah, that's definitely the thing that is, I find, most rewarding.
Thank you so much, Imani, for giving such an engaging run through of systemic therapy and your work. And
thank you.
And your journey to becoming a therapist. It was really great to get to know you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here. And if there's one thing that I could say to people, it would be that I understand the work can feel really scary. And I definitely understand that it can be quite intimidating. But when you feel even relatively ready to do the work, it can be so beneficial, whether it be systemic therapy, whether it be another form of therapy, just understanding that it can be beneficial to have someone in your corner supporting you and having a greater sense of self.
As you may have noticed, my approach to this Therapy Talk podcast thus far has not been that of a journalist. After all, I'm not a journalist. Instead, I approach it as the therapist I am, interviewing colleagues about their work, some of whom I've never met before. Imani was one of these strangers, and I took the risk of recording our first ever meeting without a pre-interview. I hope that my excitement about speaking to someone incredibly interesting like Imani for the first time is infectious, and that you can hear me admiring everyone who appears on the show. I don't say this nearly enough, but if you enjoy this podcast, it would mean the world to me if you would spread the love by sharing it in your networks. Also, please write to me with feedback or suggestions for therapy topics to explore with different mental health experts. Until next time, stay complicated.